Blog Talk Radio.
I am that man in a box. I am your old pal Wheezy, the percolating coffee pot voice, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And this is because, tonight it's because, Ronnie Adams made me. And what did he make me do, ladies and gentlemen? He made me watch, and he's going to make me review, Silverado, Desperado, Canyonero.
Yes. Something like that, yeah.
And of course,
I will
that voice you hear, ladies and gentlemen, chuckling and not waiting for him to be introduced, is, of course, the star of our show tonight, Ronnie Adams. And this show is a little bit different from the usual Rattledge and Broadcasting fare. Now, normally, you know, we have a piece of content and I guide the ship, or someone else guides the ship, and we have a conversation and whatnot. This is a show where the guest actually runs the podcast. The guest picks the topic. The guest interviews me and really guides the discussion. And so tonight, Ronnie Adams is going to guide our discussion of Silverado. It's like Open Line Friday. But we don't get phone calls. Open Line Friday is the Rush Limbaugh thing, where he just turns the show over to the callers. Well, tonight I turn the network.
And oh boy, do they call.
Well, do they ever. So I turn the network over to Ronnie Adams tonight. Ronnie, it's your show. How you doing, sir?
I'm very well, and really excited to be here. I mean, this is I've always wanted to be on a movie show with you, you know. So this
wow,
is,
I'm glad
is,
I can make your dreams
actually,
come true.
I'm a set man now. I mean, you know, I don't know what else there is, you know, in life. But no, this is exciting to be here. I will say that the opening song really had me hoping, had me wanting to like hit somebody with a cookie sheet or chair and yell "Extreme," though. So,
yeah,
it
does invoke a little Tommy Dreamer. And it's funny because, like, they hear that, like, yeah, man in a box, here we go, to the extreme, let's review a movie. Like, I don't know.
It kind of works, you know. So, no, I was going to say it matches, you know, because you're trying to get out of your box and watch
that's
stuff
right.
that other people have, you know. I don't know if that's, you know. I missed something there. Hopefully I didn't. But but yeah, it's
no. That's the idea.
I'm smart. But so tonight we are reviewing I made you watch in my eyes a classic Western genre movie, Western. Silverado. That was released in 1985. It is one of, and continues to be one of those movies that I know just about every line in it. I watch it every time it comes on if I can. I don't own it for some reason. That really disappoints me. I just realized that. And but I had a DVR it a while back, and it stayed on my DVR. So I said, well, why purchase it if I'm going to have it on the DVR? And but it's just one of those things that has stuck with me forever. And I ask people about it, and sadly enough, not a lot of people know about it. Were you aware of the movie Silverado before this?
No, I had no idea this movie existed.
Really? My gosh, that's another one. So, this movie, I probably watched it in 1985. I remember my dad bringing it home, renting it on probably Betamax back in the day, not 19, but like 1986, 87, and sitting there and watching it with him and just being blown away by this, because Westerns are something that my dad and I have always, you know, enjoyed together. And a lot of people ask me, you know, that know the movie, they enjoy it, but they're like, why is this your favorite Western? Because it is my favorite Western. You know, why not something like, you know, Unforgiven or something out of the Man with No Name trilogy, you know, like Good and Bad and the Ugly or Fistful of Dollars or A Few Dollars More, you know, one of the spaghetti Westerns or something like that. Those are all amazing movies. Clint Eastwood can make a freaking Western. I mean, he is, that's just any Western he's, you know, Hell Rider, all those, they're just amazing movies. But this one just holds a place for me because it was one of the first movies that I really remember paying attention to cinematography and, you know, the sound of it and everything else, because actually, without meaning to, my dad pointed that out to me. You know, just the sound of the horses, you know, as they're riding, you know, you could hear them breathing and neighing and snorting. And it was just one of those amazing moments where my dad and I were just like engrossed in the sound of a horse from a movie, just because it was, you know, so good. So that's, you know, one of the reasons why. It's just a nostalgic thing for me. So, I'm really excited to introduce you to it. So, and the other reason, one of the other reasons I really enjoy this movie was because it was written and directed by none other than, I have my notes here, don't worry, I'm going
Lawrence Kasdan.
Lawrence Kasdan. Yeah, I was going to make sure I got his first name right. I was, you know, didn't want to call him Larry.
But or ham sandwich.
Lawrence Kasdan, it's Ham Sandwich Anders. And if you don't know what we're talking about, you might be better off. Go back and listen to the source material. Listen to our review of Iron Fist.
Iron Fist.
Living Weapon. Yeah, it was just, that was so much fun. But if you don't know who Lawrence Kasdan is, are you familiar with Lawrence Kasdan?
Obviously I'm familiar with him through the Star Wars movies that he wrote. He also wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark. So, yes, that's how I came to Lawrence Kasdan.
I mean, if you look at the body of work that this man has written, it's incredible. I mean, it's just, he wrote Empire Strikes Back, Raiders of the Lost Ark. He wrote Body Heat, Return of the Jedi, The Big Chill. He wrote The Bodyguard, Wyatt Earp, which I realize now, you know, Wyatt Earp is the Kevin Costner, you know, it was their answer to Tombstone. But I didn't realize it was 1994. My goodness, that's a long time ago. He wrote the screenplay to Dreamcatcher, you know, and he wrote The Force Awakens recently. So this man, you know, he knows his stuff. You know, in my opinion, he's written some of the biggest movies of my childhood. And, you know, I remember my parents talking about The Big Chill. And then he's writing the new Han Solo anthology film for Star Wars. So this man, you know, he, in my opinion, he knows his stuff about movies. So I just want to ask you, off the top of, you know, just right off the top, what was your first impression with Silverado as a movie? And before that, I know we talked a little bit. I know we talked a little bit beforehand, you know, before the show started. But before, you know, with that, were you like, did you grow up on Westerns or anything like that?
No, we grew up in my house on sci-fi, adventure, the old 80s hard body movies. Boy, did I like tits when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I I was allowed to watch rated R movies, and I watched a lot of them. But my dad was not a Western person, and we didn't, like, I know a lot of guys whose dads grew up watching a lot of, like, black and white TV, and that was never really my dad's thing. You know, my dad didn't watch sports. He didn't watch black and white TV. He didn't watch Westerns. There was a lot of Star Trek, a lot of Murphy Brown. But that was about it. So, you know, you tend to sort of mirror a lot of what your parents do. And since Westerns really weren't on in my house, I never watched them. And now, yes, as you grow up, you start to develop your own likes and dislikes. And you seek things out. I never really sought out the Western. There was nothing about that genre that was particularly appealing to me. Now, I have seen Westerns, and I do enjoy most of the ones that I've seen. Like, I've seen, obviously, I've seen Unforgiven, and I loved it. Sean, I believe, for Long Road to Ruin was the one that suggested the Man with No Name trilogy, which I really enjoyed. I think the first thing that jumps out about it was how, you know, granted it came out in 1985, but it felt like a movie from the 70s.
It did, didn't it? Yeah.
Slow, quiet scenes. It felt like it was ripped. It felt like it could have been shot right around the Man with No Name trilogy. It was very much like that stylistically. And it was one of the things that lended itself for me to enjoy it. But that's as an almost 41-year-old man who has watched a lot of film and studied it and is more accepting of things. I would say probably 20, 30 years ago, well, 30 years ago, I'd be one, so, or 11, rather. That makes sense. In my younger days, I don't know if I would have appreciated it as much.
That's really, you know, it's interesting because even when I was younger, see, 1985, I was 7, so I probably watched it when I was about 8 years old, 9 years old. It's not so much of a slow burn, but there are slower scenes in it. But what caught me was this movie. It right off the top, you know, the shot opens in the abandoned shack you're just looking
Scott
around. There's coffee pots. Scott Glenn is just sitting there. He's asleep, but he immediately guns down three men. They're hunting, and his name's Emmett in the movie. And he's ambushed, and he guns them down. He does that cool trick where he flips the rifle and he catches in the air, and he just unloads on these guys. And I was like, wow, right off the bat, you know, this is crazy. And then he runs into Kevin Kline, who was playing the part of Peyton in the middle of the desert. So there's a little bit of, you know, you wonder why are these guys hunting him down? Why is, you know, Peyton out in the middle of the desert? And it adds a little bit of comedy right off the bat where he gets off his horse and he gives Caden the canteen, or Peyton the canteen, and gives him a little bit of water, and he whispers something, and Emmett goes in a little closer, and he's like, you know, like, what? And he goes, pleased to meet you. You know, it was like, of course you're pleased to be here, dying of thirst. You're in your underwear. You're in your long johns in the middle of the desert. You know, he has no boots, no clothes, no hat, no gun, no horse. He's laying there. He's just dying. And this guy comes out of nowhere and saves his life. And he's like, his first words are, pleased to meet you. So
very gentlemanly.
Very gentle, and it really set the tone, you know, for this whole movie, you know. So it was like it was enough to keep me interested. So it's one of those things where the cast, now that I know who they are, is just incredible, because you have, you know, of course Kevin Kline, and then you have Scott Glenn, and then you meet up with Kevin Costner, Danny Glover, you know, John Cleese has a small part in there. And then Jeff Goldblum, Brian Dennehy, and then Linda Hunt. If you're not familiar with Linda Hunt, She's the little person that's in the movie, and it was in Dune. And Kindergarten Cop is the first one that comes off the top of my head. She was the principal in Kindergarten Cop, but she's an excellent actor in her own right. So the mixture of actors that are in there. I mean, you can imagine you can imagine Scott Glenn riding a horse, carrying a six gun and a rifle, but to me, not so much Kevin Kline.
Not John Cleese. First of all, I thought this was like a comedy when I read the credits, I saw who was in the movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, Kevin Kline from A Fish Called Wanda? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
John Cleese. Like, what the hell, man? You know, and then it's like, oh my God, you got a heavy hitter like Danny Glover, who's too old for this shit, old
right.
man Kent, Kevin Costner, this is before he was running around telling people to die in bus accidents. Pa Kent.
Pa Kent, he risked his life
and
to save a dog.
Yeah, that's right. And then everyone's favorite villain, Brian Dennehy, who I kept waiting for him to pull out a fire hose and yell out, make sure you get behind the ears.
Exactly. I mean, you've got these people that we're not used to being in these roles. I never would have imagined Kevin Kline being the slick, hustler, card playing cowboy, or not even cowboy, but gunfighter. And then Brian Dennehy.
The one that threw me the most was Jeff Goldblum. The one that Jeff Goldblum must go faster.
yeah.
Like whenever I.
Yep.
I would never have pictured him in a Western, and it was weird to see him in this role, but I have to say, this is quite the all-star cast, and even though, it was, for a lot of them, it was at more the beginning of their careers, a lot of the stuff we're talking
right.
about obviously comes later, so
definitely
I think that's sort of my takeaway.
Yeah, I mean... You don't know what really gets me now as an adult is the fact that these people, have gone on to play different roles that weren't anything like what they played in Silverado. I mean, Brian Dennehy was absolutely despicable in his role. I mean, he was sleazy. He was the sheriff of Silverado. He was, he used to be an outlaw. But he tries to play off as a good guy. He owns a saloon in Silverado, but he's full of crap. He's still
right.
a bad guy, and it's just Jeff Fahey's in it, who is just creepy as all get out. Anyway, in some of the roles he plays, and it's just one of those things where the cast now. Blows me away at what they do. Now, Danny Glover is just Danny Glover, and he delivers one of the greatest lines I've ever heard in a movie. He's standing there with his, he doesn't have a revolver. All he carries is a Henry rifle, lever action rifle, and he's holding these guys at bay. And he goes, "Now I don't want to kill you. You don't want to be dead." It's just one of the greatest lines ever in movie history. So. This movie, to me, it not only represents my childhood, but to me, it represents everything a Western should be. And then beyond that, as a movie, the ensemble cast is just, now I realize how incredible that it was to get all these people together and get them to play these parts and to see what some of them have gone on to do and see what some of them had done in the past. So like you said, some of them were at the beginning of their career. But some of them were, pretty established at that point. So getting established at that point.
I thought this was going to be like a Blazing Saddles parody, and when I got into it, there's an actual story here. They are telling a Western tale. And I was very engrossed in the movie, but it kind of defies expectations when you look at that cast.
Exactly. No, it has its comedy moments in it, the shootout in the in his long johns and trying to buy the pistol with no money. But it was just, it's one of those things where it has the right amount of comedy, the comedic moments. It has the right amount of testosterone and your gunfights and your shootouts. It has the love story, and it has just an overall a really good story to tell. So as a whole, as a movie, it's got everything, you know, that you need to keep yourself entertained, even if you're not a Western fan. So I really believe, such as yourself, you're not, you know, you didn't, you weren't raised on the Western genre, and it's not particularly your cup of tea, you know, that, then that's fine. You know, but it's something that kept you engrossed, and it's something that, that really, that caught your attention. So, am I correct in saying that?
Yes. No,
okay. I will say, I will say that I am correct, and we will move on. But
trying to limit the amount of percolating breath you hear by muting my microphone when I'm not talking. But no, I was absolutely engrossed by the plot of the film. I have to say, it took me two tries to get through it. It's a very quiet movie. The other thing is, I rented the iTunes version of this as a remastered, and I don't know what their definition of remastered is, but it appears to be make the soundtrack and the special effects shots really, really loud, and the dialogue record in a, you know, in a closet, in a basement behind a door that says "Beware of the Jaguar." I mean, like, they'd just be whispering to each other, basically, and then suddenly, da 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 da, you know, like, oh my god. My poor wife was like, "Will you turn that down?" And I'm like, "I can't. Kevin Kline is whispering sweet nothings into Scott Glenn's ears." And then a bugle plays.
I know. If you watch the non-remastered version, when it was on Netflix, or if you catch it on TBS or something like that, it kind of evens out. So I didn't know that they had remastered it. So That's interesting.
Oh,
I would stay away from that.
I kept having to change the volume multiple times so as to not wake my wife up. But, yeah, that was – and then I just fell asleep on the ending. So I had to go back and watch it. The shootout at the end is fun. You know, it's that typical make 10 men seem like 100 kind of a thing.
Right. I mean, you saw it in the new Magnificent Seven remake. You've seen it
right.
Three
Amigos,
Pell Rider. Three Amigos. They made a whole
Three
town
Amigos.
Seem like
Three Amigos is my favorite, you know, Western ever.
And you know, and I don't begrudge you that, because it is a Western, and it is an amazing movie. So
yes, it
but,
is. Holy.
And why didn't you shoot up? It says to shoot up. Oh, the invisible. Oh my gosh. And that's another podcast altogether, the Three Amigos. There's so many subtle, you know, that was back when all three of those men were really funny. Now they're just kind of, you know, Chevy Chase is kind of sad. But, especially in that new Vacation movie. But, you know, having watched a lot of Westerns, you know, there's always a revenge aspect to it. Unforgiven, you know, the Man with No Name trilogy, Pale Rider, Tombstone, you know, Wyatt Earp, there's always a revenge aspect.
Our hero, or at least one of our heroes, is always trying to rebuild themselves. You know, Kevin Kline wandering the desert in his long johns is very, I think, very reminiscent of other protagonists in other Westerns, where when we meet them, they have lost everything, and through the course of the movie, they are having to regain their sense of self, their lost wealth.
And he quite literally has to regain everything that he owned: his horse, his hat, his gun, everything. You know, he says, you know, that was a really, you know, I loved that hat, fit just right, had a silver band around it. And, you know, he staring down the guy in the saloon, your fingers better not be, you know, touching the, you know, my ivory handled Colt. So it was a rebuilding aspect, and then it got to, it's one of those things where some the brothers are trying to find their fortune, which is Scott Glenn and Kevin Costner. They're moving to better themselves and to see family. And then you have Kevin Kline, who is just looking to make some money, and he gets ambushed in the desert. And then Danny Glover is just trying to move home and be with his dad, who's a cattle rancher. And he gets kicked out of town over nothing, over a fight that he didn't start by sheriff. The sheriff of that town was John Cleese.
Well, no, let's face it. He got kicked out of town for the crime of being black.
Well, exactly. Well, nothing. It was over. Essentially, it was over the fight. But that's what I was going into. It wasn't just a fight. It was the fact that he was black. And you had some social commentary in here, and you've got your typical revenge story. You've got your the young widow who is obviously really interested in Scott Glenn, but only has the advances of Kevin Costner. She has to keep Kevin Kline to keep him at bay. So it's one of those movies that, to me, It embodies everything that a Western should be. And it, like I said, it's a nostalgic feel every time I turn it on. Now, I have to ask, we're kind of hodgepodge right now with the plot. I wasn't really going to go over the plot or anything. But in this, Mark, I'm really interested to know, who was your favorite character out of all the ones that were in, that we saw?
Kevin Kline's Peyton character, I think, is the to me is the titular star of the thing. I think you have. Mm-hmm. I think he sort of embodies a conflicted hero, conflicted protagonist. Like, he clearly doesn't want to go back to Brian Dennehy and do bad things, but he still has to make money, and he's trying to justify, once he takes over the gambling at the saloon, trying to justify his existence, but. At one point, Brian Dennehy used to like stay out of it, let me do what I want. And initially he agrees to, but then it's all too much to bear and he has to do something. And, you can clearly see there's a good man within him,
mm-hmm.
that is tempered by a practical man who knows that sometimes you have to make deals with the devil, and he's trying to reconcile those things. I also like the fact that he wasn't stereotypical. I mean, Kevin Costner is a fun character in this. He's got those boyish good looks, and he's got that one catchphrase, "I just kissed a girl. All I did was kiss a girl."
All I did was kiss a girl.
But he's got the Superman shot. He never misses. That sort of thing. And then, the Scott Glenn character was just morose. He was just so like serious. I wasn't as into his story. And then Danny Glover, who I feel like his role is very stereotypical as well. I'm just a black man trying to make it a white man's world. And it's like,
right.
And he does it fine enough, but it's like, all right, been there, seen that, move along. So really, the only of the four of them, the only one that really has a lot of grist for the mill that is really developed and interesting is Kevin Kline's character.
And I agree with you, but completely. I really enjoyed Kevin Kline as Peyton, and the fact that I've seen him in A Fish Called Wanda, and I've seen him in I can't remember. The one we had with Tom Selleck, when he was a small town teacher who was outed as gay, and I can't remember the name of the movie, but it was a more comedic role as well, and you see him in these kind of, I guess, pigeonholed roles maybe a little more. And I watched the one where all the old guys go to Vegas to celebrate, the marriage of their friend who had, waited till he was like 900 to get married.
Hang on, I gotta do this. It's Ken. He's trying to kill me.
Yes. But it was you know, this role was very different, you know, than in things that I'm used to seeing him in. But the one that really caught my eye, even though he was the villain, was Dennehy, man. Just the fact that he was that guy that you'd love to hate. And I've never seen him in a role where I wanted to hate him that bad, just because he was the biggest douche of the whole movie, just because he knew he had every person that his character knew that every person that he had contact with, he could control them in some way. You know,
wait a minute, have you never seen First Blood? Have you never seen First Blood?
Well, yeah, but, you know,
come on.
It's one of those things where, you know, I hated him in First Blood. Now, don't get me wrong. First Blood, he was incredible. But he was playing that role where you knew he was the bad guy. But in this one, you knew he was a bad guy, but you were wondering if I wondered if he was, you know, actually going to turn around and redeem himself or anything like that. But as, you know, of course, as the story goes along, you find there's no redemption for this character whatsoever.
Where I'll meet you halfway. I definitely felt he was more subdued. You know, Brian Dennehy is like a bad guy in every movie he's in. He's like the quintessential bad guy. And he's normally more sheriff in First Blood than he is sheriff in Silverado.
Right.
This one, he's definitely more subdued. He's less mustache twirly and more, I'm just a man trying to make it. I'm just a white man trying to make it in a black man's world. You know,
I don't think that works here, but okay.
You know, he's just trying to make his way in the world today, and it takes everything you got.
Sure.
Anyway, so how many things can I quote in a single sentence?
Not enough, in my opinion.
So I enjoyed him in this role, but, you know, I like my Brian Dennehy a little bit more mustache twirly. I think he pulls off like
really?
Shitty dick bag, like just a shitty dick bag, really well. That's why he gets those roles. And this one, I like a subdued performance, but he's still like, I don't know. Like, I get what you're saying. Like, he's kind of sympathetic.
I find him not so much sympathetic, but as you want to like him, just because, you know, there's a camaraderie between, of course, they were in a gang together, between him and Kevin Kline, between him and, you know, his, you know, between Peyton and him, you know, that, the other character, there's this camaraderie, because when he shows up and Peyton guns the guy down in the middle of the street because he has his horse, and the guy, you know, shoots at him and he hits him between, you know, between the legs where his long johns are hanging down, and you just see a hole where, you know, in his long johns, and then he uses the rusty old hand cannon to gun the guy down. He comes by, he vouches for him. He said, you know, lift up the saddle. You'll find his name scratched underneath it. You know, his name is Payden, Payden, Payden. And he vouched for him. He gave him money to buy him clothes, to get himself some clothes, the whole thing. And he jumps on there, and he's like, you know, holy crap, this guy's actually, you know, being nice. And then he pulls the jerk move, and he's like, whatever happened to that dog?
Right.
And he's like, you know something bad happened to the dog, and it was Jeff Fahey's character killed, you know, Payden's dog back in the day. And that's why, you know, one of the reasons why he quit the gang. But he's like, you know, all this stuff, I'll bring all this nice stuff to you. And he looks at him and goes, you know, whatever happened to that dog? And he goes, you owe me $13, and he just rides off. Like, you know,
right.
You're really cool up until the point you decide to be a dick. You know, and then it's just like, you can't help but I couldn't help but like him. And then he would just destroy that in some way. You know, he comes in and, you know, Peyton, he gives Peyton a job, that he's going to be, you know, helping run the Morning Star with, you know, Stella, which, you know, which Dennehy owns. And he's like, hey, you know, this is yours. You're going to run this with Stella, blah, blah, blah. But remember, you owe me $13. You know, starting a line of credit the house, you know, starting, you know, he already owes the house $13. He's always got something over somebody's head. Always. And that's how he gets ahead in life. He always knows something or somebody owes him something. And that just makes him sleazy, in my opinion. You know, because he's always holding that over your head. And it made him not much, you know, it was just, there was a great deal of, it was a complicated character to make him, make you like him in one sense, and then immediately hate him when he mentioned something else. So in, like in Last Blood, I just hated him because he was, you know, he's a jerk to Stallone. He was a jerk to Rambo. You know, right off the bat, why don't you just let him, you know, get something to eat, let him walk through town. You know, he's not doing anything. You know, instead of kicking him out, just, you know, help him out. So that's why I liked him, because he was more of a complicated, more of a layered character. You know, I'll be nice to you, but you owe me. And then, you know, of course, it comes down to the gunfight, and then nobody owes him anymore because he did. But, you know, that's why I liked that character. That's why I liked Brian Dennehy in that role. So,
okay.
That's just me. You know, if it makes sense in my head, so hopefully it makes sense as I'm saying it out loud.
No, look, I don't think there's anything wrong with what you're saying. And like I said, I certainly can appreciate a more subdued, more even performance. And that's not even to say that I don't like them. I like Dennehy's performance in this. I just, you know, there's a dynamism that's captured on film when a character really goes for it, when an actor really goes for it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not really going for it in this. You know, he's very smiley and chuckly, and he's more smarmy. And I get less of a sense of satisfaction when he finally meets his demise, because he wasn't truly evil, you know. So when it comes down to it, it's like, I knew he had to go, but I wasn't rooting as hard against him. Like, I don't know if you ever watch any of the CW shows, but, you know, I mean,
yes.
Granted, it's... You know, when the Arrow finally conquers Malcolm Merlin or Damian Dark, there's a sense of Deathstroke. There's a sense of satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, have you earned it. These people were bags of shit. And you earned every hour of that 23 that got us to this point. Whereas I don't necessarily get that sense of satisfaction when he spoiler alert. When he guns down Dennehy in the street.
Well, I mean, did you get more of a satisfaction when Fahey, you know, when he bought it, than you did, you know, with Cobb? So Fahey, of course, played Tyree. That was Cobb's right hand man. Or did you kind of see him as a throwaway? Basically, that's it, right hand man.
Well, there's not enough of him in the film to really make me sink my teeth in and be like, oh, I hope you get yours. But I thought Scott Glenn's character had more of a road to come back from than Kevin Kline. I mean, Kevin Kline, by the time he gets the job in the saloon, is more into the just trying to keep his head low and stay out of trouble part of his arc. And then really he only comes alive when things start to go bad for the rest of the gang is when he's like, oh, all right, I've had all I can stand and I can't stand no more. Whereas, you know, Scott Glenn, his sister's brother is shot and the nephew is kidnapped and he's been clunked on the head. And it's like, you know, he's
by
got
a horse.
By a horse, yeah. He's got this whole road to come back on. And so even though his particular nemesis isn't particularly strong, his story is strong enough to carry it. So it's more... So this is something that Robert and I talk about with villains where, you know, there's a villain and then there's a boss. And I feel like he just had a boss he had to deal with. But the story getting to the boss was much more satisfying and interesting, I thought, than Kevin Kline's story once he became the employee of the bar.
Okay. So, you see a lot of character, you know, I think, you know, a lot of character development in Peyton, not so much really in the others, but he's not a standout character, but he was really fun. It was Kevin Costner.
Oh yeah.
Jake. Yeah. Well, like you said, with the Superman shot, you know, and
I swear to God, this is his best role ever.
It really is.
Kevin Costner.
He's shown.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when he's also done like Waterworld and Pa Kent and some of these other movies,
no emotion, you know, whatsoever in most of these movies.
Yeah, I honestly, like, it was weird to see him smile and really be, like, it was the most, you might think of, like, being somewhat facetious, but I honestly, like, he's the most alive and most dynamic I've ever seen him in any movie. It's weird. It was like, wow, you're actually, like, showing a positive emotion in a movie. Hot damn.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Like, I watched,
and that was
what I watched him in Draft. I watched him in Draft Day, where he's like the general manager of the Cleveland Browns. And
mean.
Yeah, like I don't like you know, Jennifer Garner's in love with him, and I'm like, why? He's a bag of dicks.
Right. He's not a sympathetic character or a character you can really get behind in that movie at all.
No.
And
like his, like the best part is at the end when he's like, all of that angst and all of that like jerkiness just like comes alive. He's like, come on, make the deal, you pancake eating motherfucker. I was like, all right.
Yeah,
what we've been waiting
some emotion
for. Yeah, and, it's all negative, but at least you're showing something. You're not staring blankly
right,
at the
right,
camera.
Right. It's just, oh no, I completely agree with that because. It was so much fun to see him just, you know, twirling the guns and doing the trick shots and the, or not trick shots, but the, you know, tricks with the holster and just having fun with the role and laughing and, you know, being, you know, he was more the comedic relief than anybody in that movie, because I remember one of the things that stands out to me is when he finally gets, you know, they break him out. He's in jail when they first meet him. And he's like, why are you in jail? Well, I shot a man. Why'd you shoot him? Well, all I did was kiss the girl. So apparently he kissed somebody's girl that, you know, they took it, you know, that took it to heart, and, you know, and he shot him. You know, there was a legal gunfight, but they were holding him in there and they were going to hang him the next day. So with the help of Kevin Costner, who Kevin Kline and Scott Glenn helped out, you know, earlier in the movie with the help of Danny Glover, who, you know, they helped out earlier. They break Kevin Costner out of jail. They, you know, they set the hangman, the hanging post on fire. And then, you know, when they go out and, you know, they try to put the fire out, they get him out of jail, and which leads to, you know, another kind of, you know, almost gunfight. They don't want to kill anybody, but they're just trying to escape. So he gets his dual, you know, single action armies, you know, he gets them back and he's spinning them around. He puts them in there and he looks over at Kevin Costner and just laughs like this cackling, like almost childlike laugh. And he's like, ha, you know, like, I've got him back. And he's like, shh, you know, be quiet. And then, you know, kind of all hell breaks, you know, loose. One guy comes out. He's like, yeah, they're escaping. So he pulls both pistols and he shoots him all the way back in the door up the stairs and back into, you know, where he was sleeping, or back into his house. And then Kevin Costner just looks at him and just, you know, puts his hand on his lips and just, shh, you know, kind of one of those things. And he's like, you're supposed to be quiet right now. It was just, his character in this was just so much fun. I mean, there was no need for any development. There was no need for any craziness. It was just, he was a fun-loving young kid. He was,
yeah, the youthful exuberance that, as a modern fan of Kevin Costner, that you just, I can't think of another role where he's like that. You know,
no,
I loved him, like,
doing
flips and climbing around the cage and everything. I was like, huh, what a weirdo.
Oh, It was so good, you know, and you can't help but say, oh my gosh, what a weirdo, because it was just off the wall. I mean, it was zany. It was good. And like you said, I'm in agreement. I can't think of one other role where he's been like that, especially not Waterworld. But it's just everything is so downtrodden, and he's so serious and everything else. And you know, even, you know, Prince of Thieves, Wyatt Earp. You know, he's always got to play this almost emotionally broken character in every movie. Tin Cup, you know, all these different movies where he never really smiles, ever. So that was a lot of fun to
Does
see.
Does he smile
so
in Field of Dreams? And when he's
barely
doing it to make him come, I mean, does he show any kind of happiness at all, or is it just, I am building baseball fields so they come, doom doom doom?
I think he showed just the tiniest bit of emotion, and then he realized he was smiling and his face hurt, so he had to stop. Yeah.
All right, we have a little less than 15 minutes left. What else do you want to talk about with this?
Does this make you inclined to watch any other Westerns that you maybe haven't watched in the past?
I think I would be open to watching more Westerns that people have, you know, talked about with a lot of reverence that I've never seen. Because I get a lot of that with, like, Gavin's Crew, where it's like, you haven't seen this one? Yeah, because my father wasn't into it. I'm sorry yours was, but... You know, I just these were not movies that I grew up. But I mean, like, modern Westerns that I have watched, I've enjoyed. Like, I like the remake of The Magnificent Seven. You know, like I said, I saw Unforgiven when it came out, and I enjoyed that. I know that as far as television shows, I actually want to watch Deadwood, from that was put out by HBO.
Yes, that's something I missed out on.
That's on a schedule for a TV party later in the year, if we get to it. So, you know, I think the Western is something I'm open to. Like I said, the cast really makes this movie. Because, I mean, as far as plots go, it's pretty basic what's happening here. And I think a lot of the criticisms of the movie spoke to it being... very trope heavy, but it's not that, as we say, because it's a trope doesn't mean it's bad. It's what you do with it.
Right.
I thought they handled it very well. So I guess the short answer to your question is sure. I would watch another Western.
Okay. That was the other question. Do you think it was too stereotypical of your Western genre with the revenge and just like you said, The critics said it was trope heavy, but it's a Western. What else are you going to do with it? You know, it is my opinion on it. You know, you're not really going to, you know, with a period piece like that, you're not going to delve into any hardcore. I guess you're not going to make 7 years a slave out of a storyline with Silverado.
I also enjoyed Django Unchained. Is probably one of my favorite movies. I love Django Unchained. The Hateful Eight.
Yeah, there you go.
The Hateful Eight, about half of it, but the other half I wanted to bang my head into the wall. but Django Unchained is another example of a Western where, again, Quentin Tarantino is nothing if not somebody who likes to play in tropes, but look at what he does with it. And a lot of it has to be carried by performance. You know, Christoph Waltz in Django Unchained is amazeballs. This cat...
Oh, my gosh,
he's
so good.
You know, Kevin Klein, who I think is really the heart of this film, is great.
Yeah.
You know, because, again, what is my lasting memory of Kevin Klein? It's Ken. He's trying to kill me. You know, that just zany, dastardly character from A Fish Called Wanda. So it was fun to see him act in front of the camera and be a little bit more subdued and be a sympathetic character.
and be a bit, you know, not of an
action hero. I would
say
he's like
hero,
a quiet badass. Yeah, exactly. The only Superman in this thing is Kevin Costner, but even he gets his, like, lumps. And so he kind of earns his heroic moments later in the movie. Kevin Kline plays sort of a quiet badass. You know, he's not like Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Terminator, just beefed up and wearing a leather jacket and throwing people left and right. You know, he walks into a bar. And I didn't say it before because I was trying to keep down this cough. But
you're fine.
That was one of my favorite parts of the movie where he's trying to buy the gun. He's like, I just want to rent it then.
Oh.
No.
you have to purchase it.
Okay, well, what are you giving me for this much? Well, I was waiting for the merchant to hand him like a slingshot.
Right. It was like, I forget, he said, it was also something that stuck out to me as a kid where the merchant, you know, the store clerk is sitting there and he's you know, fiddling with this beautiful pistol, just a gorgeous pistol. And he's, you know, rolling it up his arm. He's checking it in. And he's like trying to, you know, figure out, you know, this is a gun for me. And he says, how much for this one? And he goes, that one is $20. Like, for that gun could go for like $1,000 right now. And he's like, oh, $20. Like, might as well. So how much can I get for like 2 bits? And it gives him that crazy where the cylinder falls out. And, you know, it obviously is just a piece of junk, but he's still with a weapon that is malfunctioning, still manages to plug that guy in the chest, you know, right in the chest and get his horse back. So the star of this film obviously is Kevin Kline, which, you know, like you said, just a bad man all around, but you don't really, you know, he doesn't have to be, you know, he doesn't have to show it. And then you got Scott Glenn, who's, you know, as you may know him now, if you've watched Daredevil, he's Stick. And even at, you know, almost 80 years old, he's still killing those parts. But you know that he's gonna throw down on somebody. And if you've never watched a Western, if you don't really enjoy Westerns, and you've never seen Silverado, I would really have to, and I think Mark would agree, I really recommend you watch Silverado. Just one, it's a fun movie. Two, it's beautifully shot. And three, the cast is incredible.
Yeah. The panoramic landscapes in this movie are phenomenal. Again, it was something the critics mentioned. But, I mean, Lawrence Kasdan really has an eye for setting a scene and capturing the landscape. And I would say the setting is as much a star of this as any of the actors.
Absolutely.
With that said, I'm going to go ahead and give you the final word in 50 words or less, and then we'll bug out of here.
50 words or less about the movie. It has been and always will be one of my favorite movies. It embodies everything that a Western should be, and I highly recommend it. That is 50 words
quick,
or less about Silverado. And I'll throw it to you.
Well, I'm going to ask you one last question. It was something I meant to ask you at the top
of this.
Yeah,
you go for it.
You were doing so well. I didn't want to interrupt you. What made you, in 50 words or less, decide to make me watch this movie? What is it about me or this podcast that you said, I'm going to take up an hour of this man's life and make him talk about this movie? What was your thinking?
I have first chosen another great movie, and it was one of those movies that was kind of is Equilibrium, and it was one of those movies that caught me off guard that I really liked. I was like, I wonder if Mark's ever seen that, and you said no, and I chose Equilibrium, and it's and then I started thinking about it, and I was like, I know at one point, even though I asked you at the beginning. I know at one point you said you'd never really watched growing up watched Westerns. I was like, well, you know, one of my favorite movies, one of my favorite Westerns is and always will be Silverado. I was like, well, I bet he's never seen Silverado. And it's one of those movies that I always want people to watch, and I want their opinion on it. So you being, you know, you doing what you do and with Damian Hollywood, a few, you know, all your shows, I just was like, I really value your opinion on movies. Screaming Boy used to be strictly just movies. Now we've moved into, just a nerd culture kind of thing. But I'm still a movie guy, and I wanted your opinion on Silverado and see what you thought of it.
And now you have my opinion. It was a fun movie to get through. A little quiet at times. It's definitely something I needed to watch with my full attention. It harkened back to the way movies were shot in the 70s, which I really, really like because, you know, I'm so immersed now in the blockbuster culture that I sometimes forget what it's like to sit down and watch a movie that is meant to be watched and digested and appreciated and not sort of a passive. A lot of movies now are, like I said, are just sort of passive roller coaster experiences, you know, where things are just flying by on the screen and you can't
not
really
every movie
catch
should...
your breath and appreciate it.
Right. Not every movie should melt your face.
Right.
It should be one of those things. Right. I mean, and that's what a lot of these movies do. They're meant to like wow you just from the very beginning. We've lost the ability in some of these movies. We've lost the ability to tell a story. And a lot of these movies from the 70s, especially some of these westerns, tell a really good story. And
I'm always reminded of the Tiny Toons thing. You know, where they do the sound test before the movie, and there's, like, the audience now deaf.
Right, exactly. You know, and don't get me wrong, I like for my face to be melted. You know, I like these blockbuster movies. I'm a huge Marvel movie fan, you know. I like all that stuff. But I also like a really good story. And somewhere down the road, we've got to get back to telling really good stories in movies. So, and I think that as tropey and as stereotypical of a Western it may be, I think Silverado tells a really good story.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Anytime you want to do this again, you let me know and tell me what you want to make me watch. And that is it, folks. Next week, it's Here in Macaw Week on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network. We got all shows related to cars. We're going to be reviewing The Fate of the Furious. We're going to be on Source Material reviewing Wacky Raceland. I can't wait for that. On the Metal Hammer of Doom, we got the Zombie Mode as Wrecking Yard. Galactic motherfucker, yeah! And then On Trial is back with our only April entry. Just because it's 420, yo, and it's all about cars. Dude. Where's my car?
Where's my car?
Dude, where's my car?
Oh, that's amazing.
And then this man right here.
I didn't realize we're doing that.
Oh, yeah. And then this man right here, who guested tonight, he's got a podcast called The Screaming Boy. And they're going to talk about famous movie cars. So that's all week long on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network. That's 5 days, 5 shows, all about cars. All right, folks. If you have lasted with us this long, God bless you. I apologize for the sort of hack and cough routine. Hopefully after tomorrow and after my next infusion of chemo, I will not sound like I am dying of lung disease. So with that said, for Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy Podcast right here on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network, we appreciate you. I am your old pal Wheezy, Sir Hack and Cough, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified. And this has been because you made me. Be well, be safe, and behave.